And good morning. I'm Sam here on So Hot Right Now, covering the best in arts and cultures. Thanks very much there from the Vulture's Nest for a wonderful morning as well. I'm going to be here with you for the next hour looking at what's going on in the world of arts and theater. We're going to be talking about Riverside Theater's 30th anniversary, the 30 years in theater, and a look back on what's been going on, the highlights there. Look at the couple of schedules for next year. This is Bakehouse Theater at King's Cross are going to be announcing their 2018 program and what they're going to be showing, as well as Etchings to Experimental Film, with a couple of artists coming in to talk to us about what they're up to as well. But for now, this is Dave Graney on 2SER.
Everything is great in its beginning. Everything is great in its beginning. Epic. Everything. Everything is perfect in its beginning. In its beginning, mostly everything. Mostly everything is perfect
in its beginning.
In its beginning, complete. Eclipsing it with light. Everything is right in its beginning. Absolutely,
everything.
Mostly, everything is beautiful
in its beginning.
Everything is beautiful
in its beginning.
In its beginning, in its forming. And firming. In its explosion. It's bursting, gathering plume and blush. Everything is perfect in the beginning. In its beginning,
everything
is great. Mostly
in its beginning,
in its beginning, epic.
Thank you.
Everything is perfect in its beginning on So Hot Right Now to SCR 107.3. I'm Sam, and it's been an eventful 30 years of sharing stories on the stage and screen for Riverside Theaters. And to commemorate this milestone, they've lined up a spectacular anniversary program just for you to go along and enjoy. Robert Love is the director of Riverside Theater, and he joins us now to tell us a little bit more about this achievement. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, good morning.
So, Robert, 30 years of theater is a very long time. What jumps out to you when you think back on it?
Oh, lots of fantastic time sitting in a theater, I guess. It's a sort of a strange place going to the theater sometimes, because it's sort of going into a sacred, darkened space where we sit with lots of other people to, I guess, sort of have something said about who we are, what we want to be, where we could go to, and some of it, of course, very entertaining as well.
Well, as a communal experience, do you kind of, latch onto the idea that as the audience is like, they come to watch and not be a part of it, or do you kind of view it as a back and forth between the audience and the theater
makers? There's definitely some communication going on, and that's a very important thing. But it's also important that spaces like Riverside also provide opportunity for communities to express themselves, not necessarily have ideas thrust down their neck, so they can come along and actually participate. So Riverside's a very sort of open door sort of venue, where not only do we, Riverside itself, present lots of productions, but also the community also participates in presenting productions, dance concerts, music concerts, all sorts of things to the community.
So, Robert, there's one. I was looking at your anniversary program, and you have a lot of classics on there, like Madame Butterfly and Calamity Jane, but you also have Shrek the Musical. How do you pick these productions?
Oh, well, we've got a very small but hardworking programming team. So some of this program was sort of, I guess we started programming our 30th anniversary year in 2018, 2 years ago. So we go and see a lot of productions. A lot of people approach us. Sometimes we have an idea where we'll try and actually create something, particularly through our new National Theatre of Parramatta, which is our in-house production arm. And slowly but surely, a production comes together. In amongst that, one's trying to also slot all these things into appropriate dates. So it's a bit of a big jigsaw puzzle, where you're sort of moving things around for quite some time, but slowly but surely, all the balls in the air all start to come down. Some of them stay up there for maybe another year, and some of them come down and sort of roll off to the side, but a lot go into the little slots, which are the 2018 season.
How many cuts have you made that have been actually painful to make? Do you find it very difficult to cut things off, or are you all right for going like, no, this one fits in here, and we'll just worry about the other ones?
No, sometimes there are occasions when, we'd really like to have had something, really, really like to have had it, and it just doesn't fit, because that is on a tour, and our dates are already pre-committed where there is an availability for that production come to Parramatta. So, yeah, sometimes we do regret that we lose things. It's usually for reasons like that. Sometimes it's budget. Sometimes some productions are just too expensive for us to be able to afford. But in the main, it's often usually to do with those logistic sort of exercises that means production doesn't end up on our stage.
So how do you feel then that the location of the Riverside Theatres has shaped, what's been put on over the years?
Well, of course, when Riverside opened in 1988, Parramatta was often seen to be the deep west of Sydney. Of course, now it's really the front door to the west of Sydney. So our location has in fact actually, in a sense, become more and more central to Sydney. And in fact, as you may know, the Greater Sydney Commission now refers to Parramatta as Sydney's central city. And in a sense, we are. Parramatta is central to all of Sydney. And it's good public transport, so it's a very easy place to get to. We're about 10 minutes down the road from the railway station. You can come by Rivercat. There are obviously good bus services in. And while parking sometimes can be a problem for some people, there's pretty good parking in Parramatta as well. And not only that, it's cheap compared to Sydney.
So I think also with the Riverside Theatres and having been part of it for 30 years, how has audience demand for different types of theatre or shows changed over the years? Do you think people want something else out of theatre now than they did 30 years ago?
I think so. They're looking for a much broader range. I mean, 30 years ago, there was a limited amount of material that was around. I mean, Sydney, of course, is proliferating at the moment with, creative output. There's so many things on, and there's so many opportunities for the public to choose. But so at Riverside, people want a fairly diverse, if you like, artistic smorgasbord. They want to be able to choose many, many things. Some people often say to us, "Do we have an audience? Do we have audiences?" No, do we have an audience, actually, they say. And I always say, we don't really have an audience, but we have lots and lots of different and very specific audiences who choose what they want to go and see. So if there's one thing Riverside is, it is diverse. We have a very diverse program. So we try to cater to all tastes, so there's always something in the program. And while our brochure actually focuses around 30 particular productions, there's a lot more that goes on at Riverside than what's actually in our brochure.
And if you're just joining us on So Hot Right Now, I'm talking about the 30th anniversary of Riverside Theaters with director Robert Love. And Robert, when you talk about this diversity of programming, you also have a very strong lineup for children in particular, which isn't common with a lot of theater companies. They tend to do a lot more, you know, serious theater and theater that you couldn't show to young audiences. What role does children's programming play for Riverside?
Quite a lot. We have a very large schools program, and that's, in a sense, separate, but partially complements our children's and family program. So about 40,000 students attend productions and seasons of plays at Riverside during a year. But as well, some of that program, but also additional things make up our family program. So family programming has always been important. I mean, my background many, many years ago was actually at a theatre education company called Tow Truck Theatre that used to be based at the Seymour Centre back in history. And we used to tour out to Western Sydney on a very regular basis, you know, leaving Seymour Centre at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and returning about 5:30 at night, having probably performed in four possibly separate schools, but at least two separate schools in any one day. So I have a very strong commitment to young people and families because I've always believed that that's really where it all starts. The investment, in a sense, should be at the beginning, almost from when kids are in the womb, you know, and then not long out of the womb. And we have had some baby programs with six-month-year-olds, and we look forward to trying to develop that so that over a period of time it becomes an ordinary and a very important part of any one young person's life growing up. And that then translates into their middle years and then into their older years.
Well, Robert, can I ask, did you have that experience growing up?
Myself?
Yeah.
Yes, I was very involved in the very first thing I ever was in, I think, was when I was about 3 years old. I can't actually remember the performance, but I can remember going to sleep under the stage. And it was simply to perform the Grand Old Duke of York. He marched 10,000 men. He marched them up to the top of the hill and he marched them back again. So it goes. So I can sort of remember that quite vividly, not so much the performance trophy enough, but the bit behind it. And of course, that's really important too. I mean, it's what goes on behind. It's actually people getting involved and actually telling stories. And of course, you know, we try to support and encourage all sorts of people to do that, whether it be through theatre or whether it be through music or through any other art form as well. So we're very much about capacity building and giving people an opportunity to say something to their community.
Well, the audience gets a pretty cushy job coming along to watch theater. What portion of the work do you think they get to see from on the stage as compared to how much work goes into getting it there?
Oh, well, a lot of people do come along and think it's all by magic. And of course, you know, everyone knows it ain't by magic. It's by real hard work. I mean, yesterday I went and saw a reading of a play around refugee situation. And that's been sort of like being developed over the last 2 years. And it's gone from what was a 23-hander down to a 4-hander. It's been more and more focused and more crystallized, and it's showing great progress in that period of time. But it hasn't, not as though suddenly someone had an idea and let's just whack it on the stage. It takes time. Not everything takes that time. Some projects can happen very quickly. But whatever, it requires a lot of thought, a lot of ideas, and a lot of focus from the creative people trying to put that project together.
Now, Robert, as this is a momentous 30th anniversary, you're putting forward a special 30 club offer.
Yeah.
What's the story about that?
Well, we have a membership program called the Riverside Membership Program, which we've been running. In fact, that actually replaced, you know, our old subscription program. And there was always capacity for people to join that. But we thought on our 30th anniversary it would be terrific to actually get a subset of that in a specific thing called the 30 Club. So if you're 30 and under, you can join the 30 Club, and then all the tickets will be no more than $30, which, for example, you know, some of the plays, the ticket prices are up, between $50 and $65, you're going to make a lot of savings. And, of course, you don't pay all those sort of transaction fees as well. But it's also more than that. It's actually trying to build a relationship with those young people, you know, so that there'll be extra special events and other sorts of activities, talk programs, meet the artist, focusing around people that are under 30. So we thought, why not take the opportunity on our 30th anniversary to introduce something new and keep the prices under $30?
Well, what a lovely initiative, and it sounds like you're building a lovely community at Riverside Theatres. Robert, thank you so much for joining us this morning and letting us know what's going on with your wonderful program.
We look forward to welcoming people in through our doors whenever they can visit us in Parramatta, in Sydney's central city.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And that was Robert Love, director of Riverside Theatres, talking about their 30th anniversary program, which is dedicated to their audience and showgoers. And as you heard there, building a community around people who want to come and have a good time and be a part of things. If you want to find out more about the program, go to riversideparramatta.com.au or the 2SER site, 2SER.com. I'm Sam Barron. It's about 16 past 11 on Saturday, and we're going to be up next talking about the Bakehouse Theater, a different theater company entirely, with some edgy theater this time. But for now, this is Chindanya by Monster Rally on 2SER.
Of the Orient. You're now walking through the busy streets of Tokyo's bustling Ginza, sampling the familiar and unfamiliar delights of Japan. For example, Chindonya, street musicians, hired to attract attention to the opening of a new shop. Sake House, where you relax over tiny cups of warm wine and listens to strolling musicians. Or if you'd prefer the excellent Japanese beer, just say, Beer Ippon. One beer.
Oh, Beer Ippon!
One, two, three, four.
A decade on from the release of her world-conquering hit, 1, 2, 3, 4, Canadian indie folk singer-songwriter Feist makes her Opera House debut this December. Performing songs from her entire career, plus latest release Pleasure, this is music to blitz your ears and engulf your senses. Don't miss Feist on December 3. Book now at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sydney Opera House, sponsors of 2SER.
Here she comes with those big eyelashes. Keeps her memories in the vault. Right now she's thinking.
It's the Tambourine Girls on 2SER 107.3. So hot right now, all your arts and culture sorted for the weekend. It's almost 25 past 11. And the King's Cross Theatre in King's Cross claims to be an exciting new space for Sydney's daring and experimental performances. The Bakehouse Theatre Company is responsible for what gets put on stage there, and for 2018, they're planning theatre with a focus on gender equity, diversity, and more thrilling collaborations than ever before. Joined now by co-artistic director John Harrison to learn about what Bakehouse has in store and what they can live up to those promises. John, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Sam.
So, John, what's the working relationship between King's Cross Theatre and Bakehouse Theatre Company?
Yeah, sure. So, Bakehouse is the company that runs the venue. So, we established it back in 2015 and installed all the seating and the lighting rig and the technical specifications and set up the foyer, and we now kind of run the venue by programming works from some of Sydney's most exciting theatre companies. We do ourselves maybe two or three shows a year at KXT, and the rest of the time we present shows from other theatre companies such as Mad March Hare, Outhouse Theatre Company, Siren Theatre Company, and so on. So it's a really great space for people to come and see some of the most exciting companies in Sydney.
So you specifically have a reputation for putting on pretty confronting theatre, which I definitely saw this year when I saw Dryland, which was pretty graphic play involving teen abortion. How are you going to be continuing that tradition next year?
Look, we've definitely got a terrific mix next year. We certainly do have a great number of plays that are really tackling what artists are thinking about what it is to live in the world right now, and that's tackling an array of different issues, including things like the way society treats women, particularly young women as they're growing up. We've got some terrific plays about what's happening overseas and the various conflicts that are happening over there. We've also got some really powerful kind of, you know, family dramas and relationship dramas that deal with the complexities of family and modern life in 2017. So it's a really great mix of different shows. And I think for us at KXT, what we're really passionate about is theatre that kind of engages with the world. It's not just, you know, stuff about a small play about a couple of Australians in a particular situation. A lot of the work is kind of looking outwards and seeing what Australia's place in the world is and how we can kind of continue to contribute in a way, even though we're you know, in this small country at the bottom of the world.
So do you feel that your theatre then is a bit more aware of the world around it than a lot of other theatre that you might see?
Look, I guess the thing about independent theatre is that it is all done unfunded, and so for professional artists to put in the time and the effort that goes into making a play when you know any funding is uncertain and people are not sure they're going to be able to be paid for that work, what that does do though is it means that people are putting forth stuff that they're really passionate about, and I think now more than ever, you know, what artists are passionate about are the things that we're seeing happening in the world, and there's a lot of things that are difficult to kind of get to grips with, and there's a lot of things that really sort of test our morals and our ethics, and so I think artists are really engaging with that. So yeah, I think at KXT as one of Sydney's independent theatres, I think that's the sort of work you see, really, you know, really passionate work done by passionate artists.
Do you worry that with the current, I guess, you know, a lot of what you see around us is overwhelmingly quite negative? Do you fear that your program might have a lot of that negativity and cynicism creep into it, or does it offer something else?
It's interesting, isn't it? I guess this year, particularly 2017, we've had a lot of really confronting plays about a whole range of issues. I must say, though, just kind of looking, you know, in preparation for this interview, looking at the season we've got next year, there's a lot of plays that are dealing with serious subjects, but in a really fun way. So we've actually got Claudia Barry from Mad March Hare Theatre Company, one of Sydney's top directors, who had that smash hit Dryland that you saw, which was a really confronting play. Next year, she's presenting a play called You Got Older by Claire Barron, which is actually about a kind of a family coming together to look after Dad as he is getting sick and ill. But it's one of the funniest plays I've read in a long time. We've got a great comedy from Workhorse Theatre Company, a farce called The Walworth Farce by Enda Walsh. There's a really great play from a young Perth playwright by the name of Willow Marnie kicking off the year called Tonsils and Tweezers, which is a brilliantly funny look at how young men kind of grow up in the world. So there's a lot of comedy in the season this year, which is interesting. Maybe I think sort of the programming ebbs and flows a little bit, and one year of season kind of might emerge with a particular kind of bent and flavour, and then I think things kind of right themselves the next year.
And if you're just joining us on So Hot Right Now, we're talking to co-artistic director John Harrison from Bakehouse Theatre Company about what the 2018 season holds in store. And John, something else I found really interesting with your production of Dryland that I haven't seen very often is that you had a panel afterwards that kind of processed the issues that were presented in the play. How does something like that add to the experience, or how does something like that important for the audience?
Yeah, look, I think that's it's sort of something that we like to do at KXT, where it's not just about you come and see a play. There's kind of a whole conversation that can happen around the play and the issues of the play. And so for this year, we've tried to put together a panel discussion or an event around one of the shows. So for the current production, which is Night Slows Down, written and directed by Philip James Rouse, we had Carl Kruzelnicki come and give a talk to the audience actually last Sunday about the state of the environment and what the next sort of 20 to 50 years holds and how we can make things better. And it was a fantastic kind of talk. He's such a great speaker, very entertaining, but some really amazing things came out. And then he had a kind of Q&A with the audience afterwards, and people were throwing all sorts of fascinating questions to him. And that was a great chance, I think, for audiences to kind of think a bit more about the bigger issues around the play. And we've had some terrific panels this year, and some experts in different fields have been really generous with their time to come and chat with the audience about what's happening in the particular shows.
Have you been surprised by anything that's come out of these sort of Q&As or these sort of panels that have happened, or have they kind of met your expectations?
Look, they've been great. I guess sometimes you can never predict, things can get pretty fiery. So we've had a panel for our production earlier in the year of The Laden Table, which was a play written by a wonderful team of writers from Sydney's Jewish and Muslim communities. And then we had a panel afterwards that included a bunch of interesting people. Someone who'd gone to Palestine and been working with survivors of attacks in Gaza, where the parents of kids who've been killed come together from both communities and talk. And on that panel also was someone from the Australian Navy who'd worked over there as a mine clearing specialist. And obviously that's a really, that whole topic about how people treat each other in the Middle East and particularly in the Gaza Strip and Palestine, that people have some very strong opinions about that. So things can get pretty fiery. It's great. It's a way for people to really kind of communicate what they're feeling about what the play's been saying as well.
And John, you're the co-artistic director, so no doubt you have lots of artistic elements that you're going to be pretty excited to be inserting into the 2018 season. Do you have anything you could share with us from the artistic side of it?
Yes.
What's the artistry of it?
Yes. I guess there's a couple of highlights. One, obviously, the stuff that Bakehouse is doing next year, we're pretty excited about. We're presenting the world premiere of a play called Dresden by Justin Fleming, and Sydney audiences know Justin from his amazing work a couple of years ago on the Literati with Griffin Theatre Company. Yeah. He's a brilliantly funny writer, and this is a brilliantly funny but uncomfortably funny play because it pairs Richard Wagner and Adolf Hitler around a particular opera that Wagner wrote but actually was an opera that inspired Hitler. And it's this, it is uncomfortably funny, until Justin kind of brings us back to, you know, who Hitler was and what he did. And when that happens, it's kind of a devastating moment. So we're really excited about that. We've also got, there's one particular play in the season that we're really excited about. It's called Youth and Destination, written by a really exciting young up-and-coming theatre maker by the name of James Raggett. And what we're most excited about is that he's been developing this play at KXT for the last couple of years. So when we first met him, he kind of had this idea of a play that he was writing, and we gave him a week in the theatre to kind of test drive it a little bit. And then earlier this year, he's had another development of that play, and now it's coming to full fruition, a world premiere next year. And I guess that says a lot about what we're about, which is, you know, providing opportunities and pathways for young artists coming through, some of the really brilliant young theatre makers who are just starting to make their way in the arts community in Australia, and giving them a sort of a chance to test their wings and really get themselves out there. So that one's we're particularly excited about. And then I suppose last of all, we've got three major immersive theatre events that are going to be happening through the year, that are going to be across 5 levels of the King's Cross Hotel, and I think they're going to be kind of trippy, mind-blowing experiences for audiences.
Well, that sounds extremely interesting. Thank you very much, John, for joining us this morning to tell us about what's coming up in Bakehouse Theatre Company's season next year.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me, Sam.
Absolutely. And that was John Harrison, co-artistic director at Bakehouse Theatre Company, with the 2018 season Inside Story. What kind of daring and explosive performances are going to be gracing the stage at the King's Cross Theatre? If you want to find out more about the program, potentially including that immersive theatre experience across 5 stories of the hotel, it's going to be on 2SER.com or the Bakehouse Theatre Company's website. And in a moment, we're going to hear from East Brunswick All Girls Choir before we learn about a production happening tonight at the Pact Theatre. But this is Red Top on 2SER.
Where do you lay your weary bones?
It's Red Top from the East Brunswick All-Girls Choir 3 here on 2SER 107.3. I'm Sam Barron with you this morning, filling in for Sophie Lai, who's away this weekend. And talking about tonight, the Pax Salon is going to be giving the stage to troublemakers, fringe-dwelling outcasts, and misunderstood kids in Bad. It's a performance lining up a slew of music and dance pieces curated by multidisciplinary creative Bjorn Stewart, who I'm joined by now. Good morning, Bjorn.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm going very well. And Bjorn, were you a bad kid growing up?
No, I was actually quite a good kid. maybe not to my siblings, but in school I was a good kid.
So what sparked this idea to create a show about the bad kids?
There was a poster that came out, a campaign that came out this year with the Queensland Education. It was all in good intentions, and it had a teacher with a group of Indigenous boys, and the quote was, I have a soft spot for the troublemakers, the misunderstood, the kid that everybody would think, who wouldn't make it. Obviously, this got backlash because it was quite a wrong execution. It was stereotyping young Indigenous children as these troublemakers. And one of the children belongs to Dr. Chelsea Brown, who's from Queensland, an academic. And she was... quite upset that her son's image was used to be seen as a troublemaker when he actually is quite a good kid.
Right. So, you're trying to address the racial stereotyping that's evident in this poster in your performance?
Well, yeah. To have this event to be like, there seems to be a narrative in this country of like viewing a negative stereotype with Indigenous people. Whether it's for a good intention or it's for a negative intentions, there's always seems to be on the Indigenous side these just negative outlook. So we wanted to, I guess, have a night where it's like, well, if there's perpetuating the stereotype, we're going to take ownership of this stereotype. And bring this to the front.
And so what kind of performances might we be seeing?
So the main act for the for tonight is a hip-hop show. I've got some emerging Indigenous rappers from the South Coast, Pacemaker and MC Chronic, who are coming up. They haven't grown up in the best circumstances. And this is an art form where they get to express themselves. We've also got Nookie, who's also from the South Coast. He lives in Sydney now. Signed on with a record label, Bad Apple, which is the same record label as AB Original and Briggs. He's you know, throwing some beats down, and I guess it's, you know, a whole of this attitude and this kick back to society. Putting them in a corner or putting them into a box.
So as a curator, how did you decide upon these specific acts? Did you have a lot of applications made to you, or how did the process go?
I kind of did a call out and just looked at different artists that I liked and drawed for my own collective, Cope Street, the artists there to all come along. And I guess to have the aesthetic of having quite a lot of play involved with it, and a lot of play with like hyper masculinity. A lot of the shows that I watched growing up, and the shows that a lot of my friends and family watched growing up, were these, you know, cartoons of anthropomorphic animals that were juiced up on steroids, and you know, and fighting, and always violence. And that was your babysitter. That was your kind of, you know, what you were always in contact with. So I've just kind of taken that aspect of what children are growing up with, and it's something that's outside of this country that they're drawn to.
So even though you weren't a bad kid, you're still drawing upon your own experiences when you're making this show.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Drawing upon, I've just seen that what were the things that influenced me when I was young at quite an early age that I didn't have around me. We didn't have much of a father figure growing up, so television, I guess, is, you know, was our father. And these, you know, Saturday morning cartoons that we would watch growing up were, you know, the ones that are teaching us these life lessons. And they're all these, you know, American shows or these Japanese cartoons in the early 90s. So, you kind of draw upon all that as you grow up. And that's, you know, that's your influence.
Absolutely. So what would you like people to take away from the show if they go to see it tonight?
I think the takeaway, I mean, there's a lot of fun with it. It's not so heavy-handedly political. And we want to, I guess, you know, we're taking the piss out of, you know, the Australian culture, of like these views, but also taking the piss out of ourselves. And I guess focusing on this young male, hyper-masculinity in Indigenous youth.
Okay.
And yeah, I think the audience would take away that from it, this what they're drawn from and how they react to it, and you know, and how they evolve from it as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Bjorn. Thanks for letting us know about your show.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And that was Bjorn Stewart. And if you don't, curator of a bunch of music and dance pieces that will be on at PACT tonight, the PACT Salon. The show's called Bad, and you can show up at the door, get tickets for $15. Our details will be up on 2SER.com or the PACT Salon site. It's about 11:45 here on So Hot Right Now. This is 2SER 107.3.
Activate Fit on Harris is the best choice to get summer fit.
With no joining or card fees, Activate Fit is the perfect gym for you to reach your personal fitness goals.
Head to activatefit.com.au and join before December 24, and you'll receive up to 2 weeks free on memberships. T's and C's apply.
Activate Fit on Harris, conveniently located opposite the ABC building in Altona.
Activate Fit on Harris, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
You keep on lying. You keep on lying to me. You're keeping me tired. You're keeping me tired. I see. Keep on trying enough to rely on me. You keep on lying enough to deny you can't see. You were dead now. Are you giving?
Chet Fakers to me on 2SCR 107.3. And this is So Hot Right Now, arts and culture for your Saturday morning. I'm Sam Barron, filling in for Sophie Lai. And UNSW's annual art and design exhibition is going to be showcasing this week a bunch of artistic talent from Aussie graduates with contemporary art design and creative media work. And I'm joined now by Jessica Long and Doug Schofield, who are two of the featured artists, joining me in the studio to give us a little bit of chat about their clean artwork in Australia's largest art show, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that would be correct.
Design, media, and fine arts together, yeah.
Mm. Which of those is the best kind of art?
Fine arts, of course.
I'd say media arts. I've heard media arts are the best. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of rivalry between the different
Absolutely.
Arts? Absolutely. Yes. fine
pushes
arts.
Us to strive for more, you know?
That's why we're so good. It's just that kind of like friendly rivalry.
So the competition drives innovation.
Yeah. You could say that.
So how was the actual opening showcase night?
Pretty intense. I think there's 3,000 to 4,000 people there. Holy so, and it's not Christ. A huge campus, so it gets pretty packed. Mm. It's very overwhelming, but lots of fun.
A large number of people.
Yeah, it is. It was actually like one of the biggest ones they've had. They were really like happy with the turnout this year. So yeah. It was a good night. It was a really good night. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think especially because there's a lot more people graduating this year with the compulsory honors, so it's kind of amped it up a notch.
So, with like obviously you've been making art for a while, right? It's a graduate show, but how do you feel about having like your? How does it feel to make art, but then have it viewed by like a ridiculous number of people? What's is that different to just making art? I would imagine.
It can be pretty intimidating. I think especially for me, because I'm making physical things, and they hang on a wall, and people go and scrutinize it. Can be pretty intimidating.
Do they look at it with like the puzzle?
Yeah,
tilted
or they
head.
Kind of shake their head and think, no, that's
and
not very good.
And just walk on it. They say, wow, this is garbage.
Yeah, that's not the best kind of reaction. But I think because you're at uni for 4 or 5 years, a lot of people get an opportunity to exhibit sort of throughout that time at different things. So by the time you get to your graduation, you kind of have a little bit of experience with it. So
yeah, for me, I'm sort of notorious for never really showing my work. So like having a film like Apartment Block Number 10 that I had, it was really, it was a big deal for me because it was kind of the first time that I've ever really like shown my work to a whole bunch of people. But it was exciting and we got like a really great response. So, yeah, it was really fun. So it's kind of maybe I'll do it more in the future. I don't know. We'll see.
You do digital art. Do you feel like that's like in this digital age? Do you feel like it's now attained the same status as fine art? Do you think people still view it as kind of like cheaper and a bit easier to come across?
I don't know. It's a good question because there's so much noise out there with digital art these days. Like every man and his dog has a camera, so there's a lot being made, and so it's hard to be seen. But I don't know, I think COFA is pretty good. It's pretty innovative with pushing students to...
I was going to say, there's a lot of... they're really good with new technologies. They have a lot of resources and facilities with that. And I think the sort of new technologies of... And, more contemporary art in media arts is really becoming valued, which is nice to see.
So can you tell both of you, like, one of your artwork, can you tell me, like, a little bit of, like, what kind of thing you make or what kind of style it is? So, Jess, what's a kind of digital art you made that was on display?
Well, the one that's on display at the moment at COFA, it's called Apartment Block Number 10, and it's sort of my first video artwork because I'm usually, like, a traditional filmmaker. Like, I just build my own sets and, shoot on a camera. But this one was almost completely done on my computer. Like, I used Photoshop and After Effects, and then I composited like real life film behind. So it's kind of like an apartment block aesthetic with different windows showing different people, and then it's like incorporated with a soundscape. So it's different to anything I've ever done, but it was a happy experiment, and it worked out well. So
and
I
the tenth one in a series. So
yeah, well, it's actually the first. But yeah,
you're gonna backfill the catalog of the other nine.
Yeah, no, I'll never show those ones. but yeah, I think it's something that I think I want to pursue because it worked out quite well, and like that hybrid between animation and real film is kind of really interesting. So
it was really beautiful as well. Really,
oh, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, everyone should check.
So
it
now,
out.
So now, Doug, obviously, fine art. It's hard to make as many video installations.
Yeah.
How did you go about it? What was your own artwork?
Well, my practice is a bit more traditional. So I do painting and printmaking and ceramics. And in the exhibition, the Great Exhibition, I've got some sort of colourful abstract paintings there, which are responses to garden spaces. I find curated and cultivated nature spaces really interesting. So sort of looking at how we interact with nature in that way.
Were people able to ask you about like artworks? Were you like the artist in residence at your own artworks?
Not so much. I was floating around everywhere like a little social.
Have people asked you what does it all mean?
Yeah, of course. And some people.
How do you answer that question? Because that's the question that as an artist, you're like, what do you even say? Especially when it's abstract.
Yeah, totally.
Gardens.
Yeah. I think. Sometimes it's easier to be more flippant and it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's a garden. It's pretty. Just look at it and like it, you know, rather than getting really heavy and conceptual. It kind of gets people off.
Yeah.
Take a seat. Let me tell you all about it.
Well, this is my apartment block and you see these windows represent the windows in my apartment block. And as you can see, they're all moving with the soundscape. So
mine's actually pretty much just a family portrait because I used all my family in it. So if you look at it, you'll see my dad, my mom, my brothers, their girlfriends.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There you go. So you're learning things about art as is. And Jessica, you won a TWT Excellence Prize. What does that mean for someone who receives one of those?
I think the Bridging Hope Foundation, they sponsored you at they're doing a collaboration with UNSW, and they came in, a big judging panel came in and looked through all the works. And I think for me, it's like it means that I'll get like $2,000 to kind of pursue, you know, my artistic development. And
it's a dream right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it is a dream.
People
it's
give
a
me money
massive
to pursue
honor.
Artistic development.
Yeah, especially with filmmaking. I mean, that stuff is not cheap. So, yeah, it's just especially like it was a big surprise. And for me, like I kind of felt like a bit of an imposter being a media arts student. Like I'm like, I'm not really an artist. But, yeah, it was nice to get that kind of recognition, especially with, you know, artists like at COFA who are amazing and, like, are so inspiring. Like, if you go and see, like, Doug's work, like, people stop in their tracks when they see his work and they're like, oh. Like, I'm pretty sure my tutor was at Simon. He stopped in his tracks and said, it's just.
That's just because it's so big and colourful.
No,
they've got
it's
no
beautiful.
Choice.
So, Doug, what's next for you now that you've had after this exhibition?
I will try to, well, I will be still making work and try to have a few more shows. I've got a few things lined up for next year with my whole honours cohort, so that's pretty exciting, at Gaffer Gallery in the first 2 weeks of February. So that'll be one to look out for. Little plug.
we welcome it. It's community radio. You've got to plug the arts and community stuff.
Absolutely. So just kind of keep working
especially
at it.
Especially abstract gardens.
Especially, yeah.
Yeah.
But it'll be a really nice selection of lots of different work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just keep plugging away at it.
Yeah, just do the art thing.
Just do the art thing.
Hope for the, you know, making art and hoping people people love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, thanks so much for joining me this morning on No Worries. So Hot Right Now.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You can check out the exhibition any day this week at University of New South Wales. It's the annual art and design show. And the details will be put up on our website, 2SER.com. It's nearly noon here on 2SER. Thank you for joining me this morning on So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron. I've been filling in for Sophie Lai. And